Local news, culture, and NPR.
Welcome to NewsHour. It's live from the BBC World Service in London. I'm Tim Franks. As the US tries to shore up...
You're listening to Radio Catskill, and this is Radio Chatskill. We're live from Liberty in New York. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, NYSEG customers are bracing for a possible rate hike more than 30% for some households by next May. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar sat down with Assemblymember Paula Kay to discuss the proposal and how residents can make their voices heard. The Regional Food Bank of Northeastern New York is gearing up for the largest single-day Thanksgiving meal distribution in state history. We'll find out how the food bank is rallying hundreds of volunteers to meet the growing need this holiday season. Two major transportation stories are shaping Sullivan County, a new airport terminal, and the state's reassessment of Route 17. We'll learn more plus a preview of Tustin Jazz this weekend after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. A federal appeals court has ruled President Trump can deploy National Guard troops to Portland. From Oregon Public Broadcasting, Conrad Wilson has more.
The decision overturns one of two temporary restraining orders issued by a lower court judge blocking the federalization and deployment of the National Guard to Oregon. Jessica Levinson, a professor at Loyola Law School, says the majority of the appeals court found the president's authority shouldn't be questioned over concerns such as an inability to carry out federal law.
What a majority of the panel concluded is that the district court judge had essentially substituted her judgment for the president's judgment in an inappropriate way.
In a dissenting opinion, an appeals court judge warned the majority was eroding constitutional protections, such as the right to protest the government and state sovereignty. For NPR News, I'm Conrad Wilson in Portland.
But it's not clear National Guard troops will be deployed right away. Oregon Democratic Governor Tina Kotek says the appeals court ruling does not apply to a second restraining order by the lower district court judge. That order also blocks the troops' deployment. The governor says unless the second order is also overturned, National Guard troops still cannot be deployed in Portland. Federal workers at nuclear weapons facilities are getting furloughed in the government shutdown that's 3 weeks old. NPR's Jeff Brumfield reports.
The National Nuclear Security Administration, which oversees the nation's nuclear weapons, says it's furloughing approximately 1,400 employees. The agency is responsible for overseeing thousands of warheads that are not currently deployed on bombers, missiles, and submarines. According to an Energy Department spokesperson, the furloughs are due to the, quote, Democrat shutdown. Around 400 employees remain on the job to provide security and safety oversight, and the office responsible for moving nuclear weapons around the country remains funded until next week. Jeff Brumfield, NPR News.
Stocks open mixed this morning as investors sift through a flurry of new earnings reports. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 23 points in early trading.
Coca-Cola's stock popped after the company reported better-than-expected quarterly profits. Sales in North America were flat, but Coke notched gains in Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. General Motors sales jumped in the most recent quarter thanks to strong demand for gasoline-powered pickups and big SUVs. GM now says President Trump's tariffs will be a little less costly than initially forecast. GM's bill for import taxes this year is expected to run between $3.5 and $4.5 billion, down from an earlier estimate of up to $5 billion. And streaming giant Netflix is set to report earnings after the market closes this afternoon. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now up about 30 points. This is NPR News. Vice President Vance has arrived in Israel for talks. He's there to shore up support for the U.S.-brokered ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Hamas has released another body of a deceased Israeli hostage. Israel has released 150 bodies of Palestinians. There's still no clear plan on a new government for Gaza or other ceasefire goals. President Trump has signed an agreement with Australia's prime minister on critical rare earth minerals. These are used in key electronic products from cell phones to fighter jets. The agreement includes investments in Australia to boost processing of the minerals. China is one of the world's greatest sources of the minerals and is sharply limiting their export. A big cancer research summit is underway in Europe this week. NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports experts are discussing how artificial intelligence is helping predict how patients respond to treatment.
AI is increasingly used in a variety of ways to identify, track, and personalize the treatment of cancers. Several new research studies unveiled at the European Society for Medical Oncology this week show how the technology can better detect cancers in things like CT scans of mesothelioma or track recurrent disease using blood-based biomarkers in colorectal or lung cancers. In some studies, using these technologies close to doubled the length of survival for patients. Researchers say breakthroughs like these are increasingly enabling medical treatment that is personalized to patients. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now up 50 points. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Walton Family Foundation, working to create access to opportunity for people and communities by tackling tough social and environmental problems. More information is at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening. As the cold weather creeps in, more people are turning on their heat, but some residents are concerned about steep utility bills. In June, NYSEG proposed to increase delivery rates by more than 30% for some customers. If approved, NYSEG customers would see new rates take effect in May of 2026. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar sat down with Assemblymember Paula Kay at her office in Monticello, who shared more about the NYSEG rate hike proposal and how residents can make their voices heard.
Starting, actually, almost my first day on the job, which was January 1st of this year, my office started receiving calls from people who couldn't afford to pay their utility bills. And most of those were NYSEG customers. We do have some Orange and Rockland customers in the district as well who are struggling. But the predominant calls that we're getting have been related to NYSEG. And so it was very difficult when several months passed and we heard about the new proposed rate hike, which would, as you said, potentially increase bills for residential customers up to 30%. What else do we know? We know that our infrastructure and our grid is lacking and that we do need major upgrades. I mean, at my house two nights ago, we had a power outage in the middle of the night for no apparent reason, and it was throughout my neighborhood, and it lasted only a couple of minutes. But there's clearly an issue. There's issues on the western end of the county, especially with sort of longer-term outages, and there's issues in the summer when we have more usage,
right.
And then there's more outages. So there's clearly a need. But the question is, how are our residents who already are struggling to pay their existing bills going to be able to pay 30% more? And the answer cannot be that all of this new infrastructure should be paid by the current residents. There must be a different way to allocate that funding.
And I know you mentioned that in January, when it was the thick of the winter, like you were getting calls from residents, NYSEG customers. Can you tell me a little bit more about what they were saying?
I mean, people were crying. They were very, very upset. Their bills had doubled, tripled. And yes, there was an increase in usage, especially for people who used electricity as their source of heat. But it all didn't quite match up. And so I have to say that the utility was incredibly generous in that they brought their team to Sullivan County, and they brought their executives and as well as incredibly helpful customer service representatives to sit down with everybody who walked in to the county government center that day. There were probably over 300 people who came in who had their bills analyzed, reviewed. And if there was nothing that could be done that day, NYSEG set up appointments to go look at their meters and see what else could be done. There were a lot of people at the table that day who got relief. There were some who did not. And some of it has to do with the supply delivery issue. When you see your bills, part of your bill is a supply. And The other part is delivery. Delivery is what we're talking about in terms of the rate increase. Supply is unregulated right now. And so on top of the higher usage, on top of sometimes the smart meters being implemented and maybe it wasn't matching up correctly, there was also a increase in delivery charges that also impacted customers. And while the utilities aren't necessarily making money over the delivery rate increase, it still is hurting every single person.
Yeah. And, you know, at Radio Catskill, we've heard from probably over 100 people, NYSEG customers who have still no idea how they're going to pay, you know, those outstanding bills. I want to revisit the timeline a little bit and kind of fast forward to this past summer where you announced that you decided to become an intervener in the NYSEG rate case. Can you tell me a little bit more about what exactly that means?
So I'm now a party to the case, as are two members of my staff, which means that we are directly corresponding through the administrative law judges. We're submitting interrogatories, questions for the utility. They respond back to us, and then we have an opportunity to further question based on what those responses are. We also have the opportunity to review all of the public comment, all of the questioning done by the other interveners, and, of course, make testimony, too, by, you know, wrapping up all the pieces. But that's only a part of what we're doing in this office on behalf of our residents. You had talked about the calls that you're getting. We get calls. I think I fielded myself three yesterday of people who, you know, could not pay their bill. There seemed to be something wrong with the bill. And there are times where there are just mistakes. Every single business, there are going to be mistakes. But we are seeing quite a few because it so affects people's ability to pay their other bills, deal with childcare and pay their rent or mortgage. So what I suggest to anybody who's having a problem with their bill or thinks that there's a problem with their bill or is having difficulty paying, they should call the office. We can send them to a great local NYSEG customer service person. We can also send them to, if the bill is correct, we will send them to not-for-profit like Catholic Charities. They have some funding, to help people pay their NYSEG bills if they qualify. And also the Public Utility Law Project, PULP, which we work with through this intervener status. They are absolutely wonderful and really the experts, and they will help people with their bills. And we also at times will send people directly to the PSC and have them file a complaint.
I mean, I think that's a really important reminder for folks that there are resources that they can lean on if they do need support, including this office. I know you mentioned a couple of those resources, PULP, for example. Do you want to share any websites or the phone number of the office for folks to reach out to in case they do have questions or issues?
Yeah. So the phone number in the Monticello office, which is where we handle most of these complaints, is 845-794-5807. And I also, we sent out an email this morning to folks who are in our email chain, essentially, for the office. And, it is a, discussion about how to join the public hearing. Unfortunately, and we asked the administrative law judges, when they set up the series of public hearings, they did not set up anything in Sullivan County. And that was, to me, a real loss for our residents, many of whom don't have cars. We really don't have public transit here, so have no means to get to these other public hearings. The county legislature also sent a letter to the ALJ, also, you know, demanding that it be held in Sullivan County. And, well, they haven't said absolutely no. As of now, it's not happening. So there is a virtual public hearing on October 21st, which is next Tuesday, at two different times. And so we put out a mass email yesterday about how to get involved. And we have a link to that. Also, if anyone needs help, please call the office again, 794-5807. We'll help you link up and get onto the website so that you can register for the public hearing. You have to be registered in order to speak on October 21st.
I think that is really helpful for people who want to still have their voices heard, but aren't able to attend the in-person hearings. As you mentioned, there hasn't been any in the counties. Are there other ways people can submit public comment?
They'll need to register. And if they want to file testimony, it's due by October 31st. But if you register, you'll get all the information.
Okay, great. I want to talk a little bit about the next steps here. So, you know, the PSC is soliciting public comment right now, hearing from folks. What is the next step in terms of if the rate increase happens, when will that happen? And what's the timeline for when we'll hear more?
So all testimony is going to be in by October 31st. And after that point, it's up to the administrative law judges to make a decision whether or not the case will go to trial, essentially, or be settled. And we all know how the courts work. There is no specific timeline as to when they'll make that decision. But we do believe it will likely be before the end of this calendar year. If the rate case determination is that the rates will increase, that could be as soon as May of next year. But looking at the last rate case that was just decided, what happened there, it was a little bit of a split the baby kind of a decision. They decided to give the utility the increase, but spread it out over several years, which just makes, to me, the pain that the customers are feeling a little bit worse. And we know that at the end of that time period, it's likely that that utility will ask for another rate increase. So again, we need the infrastructure. I mean, we have stories and calls from developers who they have their local approvals, they have their state approvals, and they're waiting to get their utility up and running. They don't have the electric. That shouldn't happen. We also shouldn't have roving blackouts. That shouldn't happen. We know there's a problem. It needs to be addressed, but our ratepayers simply can't pay it. And what happens too, if we have residents who can't pay their bills and aren't paying their bills, that money that they're not paying gets spread out to all of us who are paying.
Before we sign off, Assembly Member, I'm curious if there's anything else that you want to share that maybe we haven't discussed yet.
I just want people to know I'm here. My staff is here. We are doing everything we can to help people, both on an individual basis and in the case of working on this rate case for, you know, the greater good. But anything that we can do to help even one person to make their quality of life a little bit better certainly is something that we strive to do every single day. We've had the small wins. I really hope that we can figure out a way to have a bigger win here where we have a better infrastructure with perhaps a better method of who's going to be paying the big bills.
And that was Assemblymember Paula Kay representing New York's 100th District, which includes our listening area, speaking to Kimberly Izar. And those public hearings from the Department of Public Service, those virtual public hearings, are today at 1 and at 6 p.m. Find details at dps.ny.gov. We'll take a break, and when we come back, two major transportation stories are shaping Sullivan County, the new airport terminal for business aviation, and the state's reassessment of Route 17 expansion. Liam Mayo of the River Reporter is here to break it all down next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Coming up on WCNY's The Capitol Press Room, we'll check in with Senate Education Committee Chair Shelley Mayer, a Westchester County Democrat, and we'll also consider legislation kicking around the Capitol that was introduced in response to the death of Peanut the Squirrel last year at the hands of state environmental regulators. All that and much more from your download, stream, or tune in to WCNY's The Capitol Press Room this afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Two projects are shaping the conversation about growth, business, and community impact in Sullivan County. The county recently opened a new terminal at the Sullivan County International Airport, part of a plan to attract more business aviation. And as we reported recently, the state has announced it's reassessing plans to expand Route 17 after hearing from the public. Joining me now is River Reporter and News Editor Liam Mayo to talk about these developments and what they could mean for residents, the economy, and the balance between business interests and the public good. Liam, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Let's break down briefly both of these stories, the new terminal at Sullivan County International Airport and the state's decision to reassess those plans for Route 17 and that expansion. You've covered both of those. Give folks a brief summary of those who may have not been paying attention to the developments.
Yeah, so the new airport, the new terminal at the Sullivan County International Airport, $24 million new terminal, partially responsible for or possible because of an $18.5 million grant from New York State. This terminal is recently had its ribbon cutting, and it's part of the county's strategy in marketing the airport to a new class of business traveler or corporate jets. Route 17, that story is the state is looking into investing north of $1.4 billion in expanding or upgrading that the Route 17 between around Wurtsboro and
By Monroe, I think. Yeah. Widening the lanes.
And it's recently reconsidered or it's announced that it needs more time to decide what the alternatives are going to be for this project, including just doing some upgrades without expansion or expanding it with a third lane.
Let's talk more about the airport. Some critics say focusing on private jets mainly benefits the wealthy. How do county officials make the case that this investment serves the broader public good?
Yeah, so the focus from the people the airport will be serving are mostly kind of corporate jets. There is a quote from Sullivan County Legislative Chair Nadia Raj saying, "We look forward to welcoming the aircraft for which this airport was always intended, corporate jets with leaders looking to do business here or make a home in Sullivan County." However, County Communications Director Dan Hughes made the case during the ribbon cutting walking around the facility thereafter that the knock-on effects of that are, in fact, in the public good. So currently, according to Hoost, county taxpayers subsidize the airport to the tune of around $400,000. But if the airport can bring in more business and become kind of a self-sustaining entity, that that number gets taken off of county taxpayers to pay. And as well, there's, you know, the knock-on effects that everyone always talks about when you get increased business or increased growth in a community. And that's just the, you know, people bringing more money into the community or bringing more taxes into the community. According to the New York State DOT commissioner, the Sullivan County International Airport currently generates $10.1 million in local economic impact, and they're hoping this expansion will, or the new terminal will, help them grow that number.
And is there any idea of when residents might see some of these benefits if we're seeing, you know, the potential reduction of the tax burden or other broader economic benefits? Have they retracted new businesses yet?
Not as of yet that I know of. I think this is, I asked Dan at the press conference, like, "Hey, you're putting all this investment into the airport looking to attract business. Wouldn't it make sense to like make sure the business is there and then put the investment in?" He said, "Well, it's a chicken and egg problem where you kind of need to have this facility in place to get the business that will be needed to sort of be there for it." So.
And let's talk about Route 17 and that reassessment there. The state had been pushing forward and then all of a sudden decided to pause it and reassess. They got some feedback and pushback from the public. Supporters of the expansion argue it's essential for business growth and tourism, but opponents cite environmental and community concerns. So this seems to be a significant pause.
Yeah, it's extending the timeline out. We asked some of the people who have been advocating against it, what they'd want to see from the state to signal that this is like a genuine bid to understand people's issues with the project or to sort of come to some kind of compromise. And the Catskill Mountain Keeper project manager, Taylor Jaffe, told us that they're hoping for an opportunity to meet with Hochul's office and NYSDOT officials. They said the announcement is a great first step, but want to see it backed up by an invitation for meaningful dialogue. But the reason these two announcements happening both sort of fairly close together are interesting taken together is they're both part of both the airport and Route 17 are part of kind of a state push to improve infrastructure in the broader Catskills region and make the area more appealing for businesses. There's a pair of quotes from Governor Hochul, talking about the Route 17 upgrade, where she says the state is laser-focused on delivering smart projects like this monumental investment in the Mid-Hudson region that maximize impact on regional economies. The Mid-Hudson region is a jewel of the New York state, and with this project, we are helping this region not only meet but exceed its future potential. And then sort of compare that to something she said about the airport, which is the modernization of the Sullivan County International Airport gives one of the fastest growing regions in the state a first-class travel hub, sending an unmistakable signal that the Catskills are open for business and ready for visitors. So these investments are being pitched kind of both as a way of attracting business in, giving business the resources it needs to do the work it needs to do. For the airport, it's a terminal that can attract corporate jets with the amenities they need. For Route 17, it's an expansion that could provide business with the sort of road that it needs to let commerce flow. So they're saying that both that kind of this is something or infrastructure upgrades that are needed to attract or to solicit business, but also these upgrades are things that are meeting the needs of business that are already there, or that the growth in this region is already there, and these infrastructure upgrades are just kind of being put into place to meet them or to help that growth continue. And it is kind of that chicken or the egg thing where the more the region grows, the more it can sort of create these infrastructure projects that let it continue to grow. But that's kind of where community leaders are stepping in a little bit and saying, like, hey, as we're investing in the future growth of our region, can we also invest in making sure that this growth has a beneficial impact on the communities of the people who already live here?
And there is that, you know, taking these two stories together, these two projects together. And as you said, they're, you know, revealing that the state and the county are pushing this growth of business development, also trying to balance, it seems, awareness of sustainability and community impact. But do you think that, you know, while they weigh the pros and cons broadly of growth, that this is just a momentary pause, at least in the Route 17 expansion and a reconsideration that, you know, it could be evaluated or even canceled?
I mean, I think that it, as of now, all they've announced is that they need a little bit more time to think about it, which, you know, the wheels of government move very, very slowly. So announcing that they're turning a little more slowly than usual is in some sense, I think it signifies something. I think I'm still waiting to see exactly sort of how serious that bid is for reconsideration. But then just to sort of throw another perspective in there, as this feedback has come out against the Route 17 project, a lot of business leaders have been saying that, like, the growth that this project is designed around is already present in Sullivan County, and that this is trying to meet the growth that is already there rather than trying to induce it. This is a quote from Town of Thompson Supervisor Bill Reber, who says, "Many think that highway improvement will spark runaway growth. I think that many factors other than roads lead to growth. We in Sullivan County have organic growth that is not going to stop." So I think there is kind of still this conversation happening about, are these infrastructure upgrades looking to pull things in that would not come on their own, or are these infrastructure upgrades being put into place to meet the needs of the community as they are already coming into fruition?
That's Leah Mayo, news editor of the River Reporter, talking about two projects shaping the conversation around growth, business, and community impact in Sullivan County. You can read his reporting and the team's reporting about the new terminal at Sullivan County Airport and the pause to expand Route 17 at the River Reporter, online at riverreporter.com or on newsstands. Liam, thank you.
Thank you so much, Tim.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about what the food bank of the Northeast New York is doing to alleviate food insecurity this holiday season. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Catskills Property Care, offering full property care year-round for commercial and residential properties in Sullivan County, including snow plowing, landscaping, property checkups, and more. Information at CatskillsPropertyCare.com. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Stephen Dubner on the next Freakonomics Radio. Pro sports in the U.S. have a serious tanking problem, and college sports have their own problems.
That amateurism pillar crumbled like one of the old Greek temples that couldn't withstand the earthquake.
So what would happen if the colleges and the pros merged?
I don't have a problem with it as a concept. Lots of the best ideas are quite crazy.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Regional Food Bank of Northeastern New York is gearing up for the largest single-day Thanksgiving meal distribution in state history. More than 115,000 meals across the Hudson Valley. Senior Public Affairs Officer Barry Lewis tells Radio Catskill's Patricia Rubio how the food bank is rallying hundreds of volunteers to meet the growing need this holiday season.
Last year, the Regional Food Bank, after more than 50 years, Equinox, a nonprofit, had been serving the capital region with Thanksgiving food. And they needed help. They just couldn't do it anymore. So the Regional Food Bank stepped in and served folks in the community, in the Albany area. And our CEO, Tom Nadachi, saw how much food was able to be given away and how quickly the need went in 90 minutes. They were thinking they were going to have a full day, and it exploded. Last year, Food Bank served 150,000 Thanksgiving meals in six counties in the region. Went so quickly that the decision was made, we're going to do it in all 23 of our counties that we serve. And so now, this year, we're going to include the Hudson Valley community and also up north in the Plattsburgh area. So in one day, it'll be the largest single-day Thanksgiving distribution meal in New York State.
You're coordinating, you mentioned in the press release, over 800 volunteers for pickup and drop-off. Is that correct?
Right. So what we look to do is, and we want to make sure that we're not impeding on food pantries that already have a Thanksgiving program in place. We want to add to that. We want to help them. We want to go into communities that are not currently being served for that holiday season. We're looking at, as you said, 115,000 Thanksgiving meals, 25,000 people in the Hudson Valley. And so in pretty much your listening area in Sullivan County, we will have on November 22nd, that morning, we will be at the parking lot of the Government Center in Monticello, and that's going to be the key Sullivan County distribution site. And cars will be able to drive up. We'll fill the car up with about a 30-35 pound bag, food items, turkey, cranberry sauce, stuffing mix. A lot of it is the farm to food, as much of that as possible. But we also know there needs to be some canned good, some shelf stable products, to really give people a happy holiday season. So it's going to be a lot more than they would need for just one meal.
Food insecurity is so widespread, and while these things do happen, like at Thanksgiving, Christmas, and other holidays, I'm sure folks are thankful for that. But how are you working with community partners or other agencies to ensure that this Thanksgiving effort doesn't address, you know, one day need or a couple of days needs, but creates a long-term support and impact?
that's where, you know, for Thanksgiving, you know, we really started planning this thing, you know, a day after last Thanksgiving. You know, the decision was, okay, we need to expand. And if you're going to be handing out 115 Thanksgiving meals, you can't wait until October to start buying turkeys. So we started doing that pretty much the end of spring and springtime. So we have a lot of key volunteers, donors, sponsors, probably about nearly four dozen in the whole region, the major supermarkets that people are aware of. A lot of the supporters that have helped us all year long, and they're in the county support as well, and then just individuals. And as you said, we would need the volunteer effort is always so critical at the food bank. You know, you've seen, and we've talked about this, that we would have to hire almost two dozen more full-time staff to help sort the food that we provide that comes in at the food bank. So the volunteer effort is always very, very critical. And, you know, this Thanksgiving site, in which we're going to be at five different locations throughout the Hudson Valley, you know, it makes it that much more critical that we have people that can go to our website and sign up. So if you're listening in Sullivan, you can come to the government center. If you happen to have friends and family that live in maybe Ulster County, Orange, or Rockland, you can go to those sites as well. So we're really going to be spreading wide. It'll start at 10 a.m. We know the cars lined up early, and I can tell you that, as you said, during this period where, you know, people are feeling the pressure, they're getting the bills, heating oil is going up, rent's going up, we know food prices are high, folks who are working for the first time in their lives are turning to the food bank for a little help. Holiday season, and we're really helping them, you know, stretch their food meal dollars.
Are you still in need of volunteers throughout the state or in this area?
Oh, very, very much so, Patricio. If people go to the regionalfoodbank.net, regionalfoodbank.net, you can go to our website, you can click on how to volunteer shifts. It's such a great feeling. So we're going to be doing the Thanksgiving distribution the Saturday before Thanksgiving. So we know holiday time is crazy. People have plans. You volunteer, you'll be done. You know, you got the morning, you'll be out of there by noon at the government center, and you're going to feel good. We have families, they come, they bring their kids. It's a great way to really show your children how they can get involved in their community. It's so critical. And the people who are pulling up are incredibly appreciative. There's no better than being able to volunteer and help. And you know, it's your neighbors. You know, it's the people in your community. You're helping touch the lives of so many people in a positive way.
This is happening in Monticello on November 22nd in the government center. Now, there's no criteria of if you want to pick up food. There's no criteria of you're not checking IDs or anything like that. You just go in there when you need a meal, just drive up, walk up, and you'll get a meal. Is that right?
It's that simple. You know, people ask us sometimes about that. And if you go to an emergency room at a hospital, people take care of you. Mm-hmm. You come to the food bank, you're going to be on that line, pulling up your car, maybe walking from a senior site or your home, and you want to get a bag for Thanksgiving, we give you one. We're not looking for identification. No one's questioning you about your help, about your finances at all. We want to serve the community. And we know the need, as I said, is greater. We've got federal cuts this year. We know they've eliminated more than 7 million pounds of food to our region. That's more than 5.8 million meals. So everything the food bank does on a daily basis and this special distribution of Thanksgiving, you know, we hope is going to just help out so many families. Again, those who are just hitting some financial times that they didn't expect, and others because of cuts where they thought they had some sort of help coming in, and suddenly, you know, the government is no longer there for them. This is where the food bank can step up
and help them.
Have you seen the need in your time at the food bank? Have you seen the need of gone up for food bank services?
Absolutely. We saw the numbers increase after the pandemic, and that was expected. But we're now seeing even more. Last week, I was over in Highland Falls in Orange County. It's right out. It's right where West Point is located. And because of the government shutdown, you know, it's possible that the military, the soldiers, the folks who are at West Point, they may be getting paychecks. But there are so many people in that community, especially who work at West Point, and suddenly it's closed. And so volunteers there, the government officials in the village, they reached out to the food bank and they said, we'd like to set up a pantry. Can we help? And it's over the weekend, we gathered up all the food and it felt so good to be able to go to Highland Falls. We helped these people in the community who suddenly, they're waiting to see. They don't know when their next paycheck is going to come. They're federal employees. They've been working at West Point. And now that it's closed, they're trying to stretch the dollars. And we were able to really give them a helping hand. So we're seeing that across the board.
Yeah, like I said, it, and you mentioned earlier, you know, these are your friends and neighbors, folks who even are working. That's one thing that surprised me most when I even hear the community cupboard that's run by the Cunard Cooperative Extension. When I went out with them, was one of the things that sort of surprised me most, that the folks that were being have the food delivered to them were working. They're working people. They weren't. They just need the extra money or the extra food because of their job is just not making it anymore.
You're exactly right. These are working people, and people who are listening understand. Nobody wants to have to wait online, you know, a half an hour, 45 minutes in the rain, and the weather gets cold. Some folks who are waiting have to carry back the bag to their home or their apartment. You know, they may not have transportation, or they may have to be taking a bus or a cab. They don't want to. You know, we're seeing senior citizens who, you know, for the first time have had to turn to a food bank. We're seeing husband and wife, married couple, both working, turning to a food bank just to need a break. They haven't done anything wrong. They're working. It's not as though suddenly, you know, they put themselves in a bad situation. Life just turned. And so they turn to the food bank. And if we can give them that little bit of help, if we can help fill the gap, as we like to say, that's what we're looking to do. And, you know, people can donate to help us. They can donate their time. They can donate money. We work with so many of our community partners. I think most people know of the partners we deal with, particularly in Sullivan County. We have great partners. We work with Sullivan 180. We work with Cornell Cooperative Extension, A Single Bite, Federation for the Homeless, the various churches. I was over at the at St. Peter's in Liberty, the church there, one of our pantry partners. And so many of these places, you know, turn to the food bank for help. And by talking to you, we can then reach out to the community, let them know what's going on, and seeing if they can help us. As a side note, if people are around Montgomery on Saturday, this coming Saturday, we're going to be doing Healy Brothers. One of the automotive dealers has worked out a deal where people can test drive a car. And it's a fundraiser. It doesn't cost you anything. Have fun. There's going to be donuts side of it. It's very family friendly. And it's a fundraising event and all the proceeds. So every time you test drive a car, the food bank gets money. And so that's going to be on Saturday in Montgomery from 10 to 4, where the food bank is located. And it's just another opportunity. Different groups are doing different things, different ways to help the food bank. What you folks are doing is another great example how the community is really stepping up and helping us get the message out.
We're talking to Barry Lewis, Senior Public Affairs Officer for the Regional Food Bank of Northeastern New York. Again, thank you so much for talking to me, Barry. Thank you so much for all the stuff that you do for the food bank, and I do really appreciate it.
Hey, we appreciate all the work of Radio Catskill. Thank you very much.
And thanks to Patricio Rubio for that. Now, on Saturday, more than 7 million people participated in No Kings rallies across the country, according to national organizers. Thousands took to the streets in the Catskills in northeast Pennsylvania, including Honesdale, Monticello, Middletown, Goshen, Newburgh, and more, to push back against the current Trump administration. Radio Catskills' Rosie Starr and Kimberly Izar spoke to attendees at some of the rallies and sent us this audio postcard.
The steady drumbeat at the No Kings rally in Honesdale are just some of the sounds that kept the crowd energized on Saturday. The rally drew hundreds of people holding American flags and signs with crossed-out king crowns to push back against President Trump's administration and policies, including increased immigration raids, healthcare cuts, and threats to LGBTQ plus rights. Radio Catskill's Rosie Starr spoke with Honesdale Mayor Derek Williams about why it was important that Honesdale join the national movement of over 2,000 protests across the country.
How else does this benefit the community at large?
I think it's just important for people to feel safe in their community and like they can have their words matter. I feel like it's important for people to have safe spaces where they can be among other people that care about the same things as them, and Honesdale is a good place for something like that. In Pennsylvania, we're starting to see the impacts of the federal budget filtering into the state budget shutdown, and we're looking at, in November, SNAP benefits not being a thing anymore for folks, and that is a serious concern for us here in Honesdale and Wayne County. Our food pantries are already stretched, and they're doing the best they can, and we're expecting an influx of new people who might need that aid.
Just 40 miles east of Honesdale, another No Kings rally in Monticello drew hundreds of protesters where the energy was just as light. Some attendees wore costumes, played music, and chanted as cars honked in solidarity along Broadway.
Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are. So we tell them we are the people, the mighty, mighty people, fighting for justice and liberation.
The No Kings rallies took place as the federal government enters its fourth week of a shutdown. Mindy Poon from Rock Hill, New York, says she's here for the people who aren't able to push back.
My husband's an immigrant. My children are first generation on their father's side. And I'm standing for them and for all of the disenfranchised and underrepresented folks because I can.
And, you know, as you describe, immigration is something that is top of mind for people. Are there other issues that are also reasons why you're coming out today?
So many. For my daughter, if she has a daughter, for her daughter's daughter's daughters, for all the women of the world to have autonomy and advocacy and rights over their own body and their own life choices.
Monticello resident Lorraine West says the administration's actions have real life implications. She's scared about what Trump's big, beautiful bill will mean for her.
He's cutting my food stamps. I need my food stamps, okay? I live in a senior housing. Sooner or later, I'm gonna be, you know, I don't even know where I'm going to be in the next 2 years.
West says people shouldn't be surprised by what they're seeing. She says his administration is doing exactly what they campaigned on.
Most of these people probably voted for Trump. They regret it today, okay? I knew who I voted for, and it wasn't Trump. And he said what he was going to do, and he's doing it.
Still, the energy at the No Kings rallies remained high and hopeful. In Monticello, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll find out what's in store for this weekend's Tustin Jazz Festival in Harrisburg. This is Radio Catskill.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole, Program Director at Radio Catskill. I just wanted to thank you for standing with Radio Catskill after our federal funding was eliminated, for making a donation and making our fall fund drive the shortest fund drive, the quickest fund drive we've had in 35 years. I cannot tell you how much it means to us. Thank you so much. Please take a moment and take a bow and then get ready to celebrate with us because it's time once again for Pints for Public Radio in Pennsylvania. We're doing it Sunday afternoon at Wall and Paul Pack Brewing Company in Hawley, PA. Join me and the Radio Catskill crew for an afternoon of brews, beats, and community spirit to benefit our station. Drink beer, support public radio, and let's have some fun. Come stand with us, raise a glass with us, and toast independent local media. Pints for Public Radio, noon to 4 Sunday, Walpaw Pack Brewing Company. I'll see you there.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This weekend, Tustin Jazz hits Narrowsburg. Catch performances by Faye Victor, Kevin Hayes, Kevin Graham, and more Friday and Saturday at the Tustin Theater. Kat Montese from the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance is here to tell us more. Good morning.
That's right. Hello, Tim.
Tell us how Tustin Jazz came together. What's it all about?
Well, Tustin Jazz was on hiatus last year. The last time you saw us was in 2023. And you saw a lot of favorites like Kazri Jackson performed there. And last year was a rebuilding year, as we say in sports. And this year we are coming back with a bang. It is a very, very exciting lineup.
This is a great lineup.
Thank you. I think that if you are a music lover at all, but particularly if you are a fan of local musicians and local music, you're going to really be excited about this lineup.
I mentioned a few of the folks in the lineup. Can you tell us about some of the folks that are there? And, we have such a rich group of musicians all over, but so many like jazz, like hot shots. Can I call them hot shots?
We can. I was really, really pleasantly surprised as I started working on this program. And I want to shout out Thane Peterson from Living Jazz.
Yay, Thane.
Yay, Thane. He, was absolutely incredible. I just cold called him to see if I could just get some information. I just wanted to know who do I need to contact.
You cold called the right person.
I did. I went right to the source. And he is so modest. You know, he said, well, you know, I just know a little bit here and there. And then he proceeds to send me an encyclopedia.
Yes. And you got most of them here. I've mentioned Faye Victor, Kevin Hayes, Kevin Graham, Tony Marino, Thurman Barker, that's Tyler right. Dempsey, Matthew Albach, and even more.
Will Selenrad and Catskills Jazz Brunch on Saturday morning. That's a special event. So Friday night and Saturday.
Yeah, let's walk through the schedule. The so it starts on Friday.
Starts on Friday night in the Tustin Theater. We've got the Kevins, Kevin Hayes and Kevin Scott Graham, Poet Laureate of Sullivan County. And then a very special performance by Faye Victor, a jazz vocalist, who, if you listen to WNYC, you may have heard her last year. She had a special performance there, but she is going to be performing with a trio, and they're doing Herbie Nichols' Sung. Jazz musician Herbie Nichols passed away before he finished a lot of his work, and so she has sort of posthumously collaborated with him to lay original lyrics on top of his work. And so this is sort of like a reimagining and a celebration, and it's going to be swinging. And then Saturday night, Armo is coming up from the city to join us, and I'm really excited to have them because some of those musicians came together because they played with Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, if you're familiar with her. And it's funny because when I talked to Tony Jarvis, who was my contact with Armo, he mentioned that, and I said, oh, you know, it's funny, I saw Sharon Jones at the Bandshell in Prospect Park not too long before she passed away. And he said, was it the one with the big orchestra? I said, yeah. He said, I was in that show. So I saw him years ago, and then here we are connected now. So they're coming up from the city to bring like an Afrobeat jazz set. And then that is going to be followed by a very special tribute to the late jazz pianist Hal Galper.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of Hal's friends from near and far are going to be there. And a lot of the folks that he played with at Rafters are going to be there. And Thurman Barker is going to be there. Tyler Dempsey, Matthew Albeck,
yeah.
Tony Marino. If you checked in with Jazz on the Hill or Jazz on the Farm not long ago, some of these names might sound familiar.
And also on Thane's Living Jazz Show, we always featured a bunch of those folks too. You are at the Tustin Theater for those performances, but you mentioned that Catskill Jazz Brunch, that's at Krause Recital Hall on Saturday at 11. Tell us about the brunch a little bit.
That's right. If you need a little daytime jazz, and we all do, you should join us at Krause Hall at our Main Street offices on Saturday morning at 11 o'clock for Catskill's Jazz Brunch. It's going to be a catered brunch. There's going to be a pop-up vinyl sale from our friends at Rivertown Sound in Berryville. They're going to be there slinging vinyl. There's going to be live music from Matt Hoffman and Will Selenrad. So it's going to be cozy. It's going to be intimate. It's going to be sunny. We'll have the doors open. You can meander out onto the balcony and wave at the people. It's going to be a really nice weekend. It's going to be a great time. In fact, I was thinking if you, we have an all access pass available. If you think that you might want to come to more than one thing, I would just go ahead and get the all access pass so that you can come to whatever you want.
Tell folks about the ticket information, where they can get the info.
You can go to our website, Delaware Valley. DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. It's got all of our information for Test and Jazz. And again, that's Faye Victor, Kevin Hayes, Kevin Graham, Catskills Jazz Brunch, a tribute to Hal Galper, and then Armo coming up from Harlem to join us. So it's going to be a really wonderful weekend.
Some cool special collaborations you mentioned there.
That's right.
Without playing any favorites, anything you're particularly excited about?
That's hard.
Just the whole thing, because you're organizing it.
I'm really proud of this one. I would say I started at Delaware Valley in May, and I've been involved in a bunch of our live events, but I would say this is the one that I've had my fingers on the most. And so I'm really excited about this one. And there's a lot of energy behind it, because I think it wasn't here last year. And so people are really chomping at the bit to have a good old fashioned concert.
Yeah, and this particular type of music, jazz,
absolutely,
resonates with so many people. And then the special tribute to Hal, mm-hmm. who is a luminary in the area, mm-hmm. passed away this year. Too.
I think I'm most excited, I would say, about Faye Victor. I think that she performs locally the least, and mm-hmm. so sort of catching her felt like catching a shooting star. So I'm, and she's going to be doing this very special performance of her original work with Herbie Nichols sung, and she's bringing a trio. So I'm really excited about everybody. Every single element of the weekend has something really special. And if you don't want to be out late, we've got a daytime thing for you. And if you want to rock out all night, we've got two two double headers.
Stay up all the Friday through Saturday. Just
yeah,
do the
don't
whole thing.
Sleep. No sleep. Bus club, another club. Just hang with us.
All right, we're talking to Kat Montese from Delaware Valley Arts Alliance about Tustin Jazz at the DVAA and the Tustin Theater this weekend. It's Friday and Saturday. There's more information about all of the great lineup and the musicians and the brunch at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder that you can find out about more events in the community on our community calendar on our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey there, I'm Kimberly Izar, saying thanks again for helping us reach our fund drive goal and to invite you to Pints for Public Radio on Sunday afternoon. Help the Radio Catskill crew celebrate with an afternoon of brews, beats, and community spirit. Drink beer, support public radio, it's that simple. So join me for a pint for independent local media. Pints for Public Radio, noon to 4 on Sunday at Wall and Pawpack Brewing Company in Holly, Pennsylvania. I'll see you there.
Radio Catskill, keeping voters connected in New York State. New York voters can apply for an early mail-in ballot for any reason. The last day to apply for an absentee or early mail-in ballot by mail or online is October 25th. The last day to apply in person is November 3rd. All absentee and mail-in ballots must be postmarked by November 4th or returned in person to the Board of Elections or any poll site by 9 p.m. Election Day.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill. Today's weather, sunshine mixing with some clouds and a high of 60. Cloudy with a couple of showers overnight tonight with a low 44. And looking ahead, a shower around mainly early tomorrow, high only 51, low 38 tomorrow, and breezy, cooler Thursday, high 48.
Thank you for supporting Radio Catskill.
thank you for standing up for free speech and a free press.
Thank you for keeping local news, culture, and NPR alive.
Thank you for keeping the support going so we can keep this station growing.
Thank you for helping Radio Catskill stay strong, independent, and free.
Your support keeps Radio Catskill on the air, serving our community first.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, Dominican-American actor Judy Reyes is having a moment. We talked to her about acting, but also politics.
Everything that I am is being threatened, and yet here I am. So is the answer to not say something or to say something?
That's this week on Latino USA. Thursday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.